Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adesk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Tuesday, April 12th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Little pressure on gold today, not much. 150 to the downside, 150 at $1,257. And I'm going to go through the report a little bit slower. Everybody says I talk too fast, so I'm going to slow it down. And if Al reminds me later on in the program, we'll go ahead and go over the gold and silver prices so once again. Did you hear that, Al?
No, did you say something, Aldi?
Yeah, typical. Typical. Anyway, gold.
I didn't recognize you're talking so slow. I didn't think it was you.
Gold down 150, 1,257. Silver up. Nice day for silver. Up 0.26. Almost 1.75%. 16.27. 16.27. Platinum was up $11. Finally made it over that 1,000 level of 1,005. And palladium, we're looking at 550 for palladium. The USDX today, it was all over the board today. It was up, it was down. Currently, I'm looking pretty much unchanged, 93.99. Crude oil had a good day, up 160 at 41.96. 41.96 for crude oil. The U.S. paper markets today, they're cheering, most likely because of the higher oil prices today. Dow was up 165 points at 17,721. The NASDAQ up 38, 48.72. The S&P up 19 at 2061, 2061. 10-year yield up 0.06 at 1.78%. Pressure on the euro, though, down 0.10 at 114, and not a lot of action in the foreign markets. So I saw a headline today. This isn't funny, but Venezuela, the land of 500% inflation. I can only imagine what's going on in that country. Certainly, you know, with the low oil prices and the bad government that they have, certainly you know, they're having a tough go of it, but so were all of these other emerging markets with, you know, they were living grand with the higher oil prices and with the drop, that we've seen take place, certainly has not helped their economy, as so many of these countries, you know, their social, you know, they have a lot of social benefits to pay. They have a lot of benefits to pay.
Which means what's Venezuela's fundamental problem? They've had a leftist government for a generation or thereabouts, maybe more. And what that does is it entitles people. It says, "Oh, you're entitled to food and clothing and shelter that you haven't actually earned. And those of you who have earned something, you're not entitled to keep what you've earned. You have to share it with people who haven't earned things." And you can sit back and say, "Well, it's a noble kind of idea that, you know, you help the poor and the rest of that." But you don't just help the poor. You help the hustlers and the con artists and the lazy and the people who want to get by without working at all. And ultimately, you get so many of them running around, you can't produce anything. They don't have any food on their shelves right now.
No, they don't.
Their products are gone because their producers are gone because the government has driven them out of existence with high taxes and confiscation and whatever, and idiotic government policies. You know, I was just talking about, wrote an article for this issue, with this week's issue of the American Survival, and pointed out that bubbles are man-made, are created by government, and they're all unsustainable. And every time, and what becomes increasingly apparent to me, is that every time government creates some sort of a bubble, you know it's going to burst. It's a pretty bubble. It's a sweet-sounding bubble. It's, "Oh, wouldn't it be lovely? Bring out the band. We'll all sing Kumbaya," the bubble theme song. But in the end, bubbles are by definition unsustainable. And when you start these illusions, it might seem like a great idea at first, but inevitably it blows up in your face. And what you're seeing in Venezuela is just that. Communism is a kind of bubble. They've got some notion that the brilliant central planners in government, they can run the situation better than the free market. Mm-hmm. And all they do is spin bubbles. I mean, they are like Lawrence Welk. And somebody's got to turn off the bubble machine and let the free market address the problems. Government will create a bubble every time they intrude. In fact, the article dealt with Stanley Druckenmiller, who was a Wall Street hedge fund manager and a billionaire. And he explained how he got there. He says, while everybody else is looking at the present, right, they're speculators, they're looking at the present. He was looking into the future. He was an investor. And what he looked for were fundamental trends, policies, programs, supplies. He looked for something that was unsustainable. And then he figured out what's going to be most adversely affected when this unsustainable trend comes to an end, and what is going to prosper when this unsustainable trend comes to an end. And he governed himself accordingly, and made his investments accordingly. He averaged 30% return on investment for 25 years, and he didn't have a single year out of the 25 when he actually lost money. Pretty extraordinary performance, right? And it's simply based on looks for things that are unsustainable and then bets against them. Well, the article made me realize everything that this government does is unsustainable. Every time the politicians, the presidents, Janet Yellen stand up and essentially says, "We're here to help you and we've got something new and exciting," like negative interest rates, for example. There's a bubble for you. Watch and see how long it takes for that one to burst. They come up with these stupid ideas and try to sell it as if it's candy. And they get away with it most of the time. But inevitably, it's a bubble. It's unsustainable. Bet against them if you want to make money. And then one of the points of the article is, what is the biggest bubble in the world right now?
Credit.
No.
Debit.
The biggest bubble in the world is fiat currency. Not just the fiat dollar, but all of the fiat currencies. We don't have any real money in this world anymore. At least not that's in public circulation. That's a bubble. That's unsustainable. That's one of the things that people should be betting on. They should sit back and say, wait a second. I'm going to do what Stanley Druckenmiller did. I'm going to take a long view on this situation. I'm going to look for something that can't be sustained. We know that fiat currencies, out of 275 attempts, 270 of them blown up, they've burst, and the other four or five that are still functional are the ones that have been started recently, like the U.S. dollar, the euro, maybe the yen, the yuan. Right? Well, they know that it's failed. Right now, it's 270 out of 275 times. It's a good chance that our current fiat currency is unsustainable. Stanley Druckenmiller, he says you got to be a billionaire by looking for things that are unsustainable and then betting against them. That's all. But he had to bet. He had to place his bet and then wait until the tide turned. And it began, the fact that they are unsustainable became apparent to everyone. Right? Gold and silver, gold and silver, gold and silver. If the fiat dollar is an unsustainable bubble, and I believe it is, then what do you bet on if you want to make money? If you're going to emulate Stanley Druckenmiller, get yourself some gold, get yourself some silver.
And I've been referencing Doug Nolan. He's in our. He's also in our weekly newsletter. And you can't have. He talks about the credit bubbles. It's the bubble of all bubbles. But you can't have a credit bubble without the fiat without a fiat currency. So you know this is and this
so which
is
came what, first.
Which came first? You have
chicken
to have
or the egg.
You
gotta have the fiat.
And that's
currency.
What I say day in and day out, week after week. And it really is all about our monetary policy. You can come and bring all kinds of solutions and things to the table, but until you fix that problem, there isn't anything that could be fixed. It just gets another Band-Aid. Yeah. It just, you know, more debt is created to fix it, mm-hmm. To put the Band-Aid on,
until
and the bubble grows bigger and bigger. Yeah.
And that's what is happening.
And that's how wealth gets redistributed. That's how wealth is destroyed. And that's how, the threads of society are torn. And it's just not the little tulip bubble that where, you had this, people were running after tulips. I mean, you're looking at this situation, this problem that we have on a global basis. It's just not one little Venezuela that's having the problem. It's going to happen everywhere. We are so interconnected. And that's what they don't want to break. They do want to collapse the whole system. They know what's going to happen. And they're going to build it and make that bubble bigger and bigger and bigger until it finally does bust. Because as long as that bubble gets bigger and bigger and bigger, guess what? They make billions and billions of dollars on it. You know, and it's just, they don't care about you.
No, they don't.
They
just care
you.
That you whether or not
they just want your money. They just care about your money.
I don't even your money. You don't have any. Most people don't have any money.
There's
all they 20 trillion dollars
sitting there that I'll bet they're going to use somehow, some way.
Yeah, but they're not going after money. They're going after currency. It's a different thing. Just make a
they
fine
become
point
more powerful
of
and they become more wealthy.
Yeah,
they're not going to let you keep your money.
Well, you wouldn't know what to do with it anyway, Melody. You should give it to some really rich guy or some politician.
Should I donate it?
They know how to handle this stuff properly, Melody. Just look at what a wonderful job they've done with the U.S. and global economies. Yeah. I mean, these peoples are real geniuses.
Yeah, they really are.
To trust them with our lives and our money and whatever else it is they want, because they know how to handle things and we're too dumb to know.
George Soros, the scumbag of the world, he's coming out saying, hey, if the European Union doesn't start putting some money into these refugees situation, the union's going to collapse. It's like, George Soros, you're part of the problem.
Yeah, I know.
You know, hey, why don't you eliminate some of your billions of dollars and give to the European Union? Why don't you take these refugees into all the land that you probably own and put them in some safe zone? Why don't you live with them?
Invite them into your home or your mansion.
Yes.
Now everybody's willing. The liberals are willing to allow illegal aliens, for example, to come into this country. All right. They think it's a wonderful thing. All right, fine. Open the door to your house. Put up a sign, say, in Spanish, if you're an illegal alien, come here for food and water and whatever, and you can live here. and see how long it takes before you change your mind about bringing illegals into the country. When they've torn your house apart and eaten all your food and kicked all your windows out and maybe raped your wife or your children, maybe you'll say, you know, maybe this isn't as great an idea as I had previously thought. It's unfortunate what should happen with the illegal aliens. They should be what one of the things I'd do with illegal if I were in a position to do it, I would deport every one of them, all of the able-bodied men. I'd give them 8 or 16 weeks of basic training and a U.S. military school. I'd teach them how to fight. I'd teach them that the government of Mexico is corrupt from top to bottom. And I would send them back to southern Mexico one company at a time. Give them an AR-15, 1,000 rounds of ammunition, and let them know, don't you come back here again ever. But if you want to do yourself some good, get rid of the crooks in your own country. And when the Mexican government understood that every time they sent an illegal alien into this country, he was going to come back into Mexico with an AR-15, 1,000 rounds, a lot of people say, you know, Mr. Trump, I think we will, but how fast could you start that wall? Because we're ready to pay right now. They aren't going to want that coming back at them.
Wow.
But as it stands right now, we don't send the illegals back. What we do is we give them welfare and supplements and make sure they have emergency health care.
I don't think we have to give them an AR, but what we do have to do is take away the benefits, take away the welfare, and penalize companies that hire them.
I think one of the things that should be true for anybody who's immigrating in this country, you're not going to get any welfare until you've become a citizen. Whatever the citizenship process is, you don't become eligible for welfare until you actually become a citizen, which means you better be coming here to work.
That means no health care. That means you can't go to the hospital with no medical card or anything like that and get free care.
If it's an emergency, yeah.
If it's an emergency, life and death type of a situation, yeah. But, you know, no.
Not going to get any unemployment. Not going to be sending money back to mom and dad and the 16 brothers and sisters back there in Puerto Vallarta.
But no, I mean, if they're sick, they should be made comfortable and then send them back to Mexico for care.
Well, if they want health care, fine.
No,
we'll provide health care, but we'll send the bill to your home country.
Yeah. Deduct it from what we give them now. So, I mean, there are things that can be done. That doesn't really hurt anyone, but yeah, we got to stop the money. That's what it's all about, the money. So, anyway, we had time for break yet. Another interesting, I think this is important, Saudi Arabia and Russia, they reached a consensus on an oil freeze, and you have the U.S. shale output heading for a two-year low. So what I think is important, that they're going to, you have the Saudis, and you have Russia working together. I think that's the story. It's not so much the cap on the oil. It's that they're working together. You also have OPEC members that will meet with other major producers, including Russia, to discuss capping production coming April 17th, which is, the end of the week? So I think that's interesting. You know, with Saudi being the biggest OPEC producer, they said previously it would agree to cap only if it
Russia
joined.
Might actually be a bigger producer. Some people think Russia is producing more than Saudi Arabia.
Maybe. So
in any case, it is odd because allegedly Saudi Arabia pushed production up, according to some sources, in order to hurt Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And they wound up crashing the price of oil and hurting themselves and everybody else in the oil community. It's odd that Russia would settle up and say, okay, let's be buddies and pals. But politics makes for strange bedfellows and really strange elections, if you can judge by the one we have here in this country.
Just let me finish this up real quick. American crude supplies, they're remaining near the highest level since 1930. So.
Yeah, which means price is not going to go down in the immediate future. There's more supply out there than there is demand.
It's not going to go up,
We'll be back after just a couple of brief and fairly painless commercials. Please stay tuned to Melody Cedarstrom and myself on Financial Survival.
make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Well, I wanted to remind the listeners that we're going to continue with the special on the Mid-State 61 $20 Liberties, only this time we're going to change it just a little bit. If you would like the St. Gaudens, it'll be your choice. It'll be the same price. St. Gaudens usually run a few bucks more, but it'll be the same price for a Mid-State 61 $20 Liberty gold piece. If we go back to April 1st, we had gold at $1,223. Today, when I worked on this comparison, gold was a little bit higher than what it was when I gave you the closing numbers. It was at $1,261, so I'm going to use that number. So we saw a $38 increase in spot gold. But using the wholesale prices for the $20 Liberty gold pieces, those are up $60. So a nice little rise in the $20 gold pieces versus the melt value of a gold bullion coin. And again, they're only, what, $40 more than what an American Gold Eagle would sell for. So a terrific buy for the Mid-State 61 $20 Liberty gold piece. And the reason that there's only such a small spread between a Mid-State 61 $20 Liberty and a gold bullion coin, it's because of that I've lowered my pricing in order to give you that special, special deal. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. DGS for Discount Gold Silver Coins.com.
I got an article, U.S. article from Bloomberg.
And the headline is U.S. braces for worst earnings season since 2009 crisis.
Mm-hmm.
They have a chart here to illustrate this. It's who provided the chart. As Bloomberg itself created the chart. And here's what they say, and then I'll try to describe the chart to you. And actually, the chart's fairly simple, and you'll be able to get the idea. U.S. corporate profits are expected to drop by the most in 6.5 years in the first quarter of this year, led by a wipeout in the embattled energy, Earnings from companies in the Standard & Poor's 500 index will fall 9.8% year over year, which would be the sharpest decline since the third quarter of 2009, and a fourth consecutive quarter of contraction, according to Bloomberg data. Results will be insufficient to justify current stock valuations, says Alex Bellifer, head of global macro strategy and research at Pavilion Global Markets. And what that means is if the results will be insufficient to justify current stock valuations, it means that the markets are likely to suffer some significant decline as these corporate reports start turning out, these quarterly reports start turning out, and people will begin to realize, they're not making a profit. But if you look at this, I know you can't see, listening to the program, you can't see this chart, but it's actually fairly simple. It's just 13, it's a bar chart, 13 bars leading from the fourth quarter of 2012 up to the first quarter of 2016. And if you look at the last four quarters, the second quarter of 2015, the third quarter of 2015, the fourth quarter of 2015, and then the first quarter of 2016, you can see that every one of them are in negative territory. Profits dropped by year to year close to 2% in the second quarter, and they dropped by close to 4%, say 3.5%. 4% in the third quarter of 2015, and in the neighborhood of 6%, 5-6% in the fourth quarter of 2015, and here, first quarter, expected to drop about 9.8%. Now, we're going from 2% to 4% to 6% to 9.8%. You can see the trend here, but the trend doesn't just start with the second quarter of 2015. It starts all the way back. You can go to the peak of the quarters that are represented on this graph. The number one, the top one, is the second quarter of 2014, where profits were actually about 10% up year over year, okay, from the second quarter of 2013. And from there on, it goes down. The next three, they're still positive. Third quarter, this is confusing. I guess it's not as clear as I'd hope, but the point I'm trying to make is they are from second quarter 2014. Profits are falling. Falling from 10% to 8% to 4% to 1%, and then they go into minus 2%, minus 4%, minus 5%, minus almost minus 10% for this quarter. The implication and the important point of the graph, they don't bring it out in the article, but the important point is this is corporate profits have been dropping since second quarter of 2014. All right? This isn't a recent phenomenon. They have been steadily dropping now for almost a year. In fact, almost 2 years is what we're talking about.
Thank you, strong dollar.
Well, that would be a big part of it.
It is a big part of it.
Mm-hmm. So
that's why they're crying. That's why they're crying.
Yeah,
well, you know, and that's why they've gone out and they borrowed in order to buy back their shares to keep their shares from dropping. I mean, the whole Wall Street, the numbers you get, they're all so phony. You know, there's truly no fundamentals whatsoever.
Well, there are fundamentals, but they've just tried to paper them over and conceal them and say, we don't have to pay any attention to that because we've got this under control and we can make this happen.
Yeah.
Only they're not. They can't make it happen.
The fundamentals are there for it to drop. You know, if you line up, you know, there's more you can find You know, the and I believe Alcoa was one of the first companies to report. They didn't do very well. And so you're not going to see a good earnings here. And so.
Well, the implication again, we've been going deeper and deeper into trouble, at least in terms of quarterly profits. There has been a steady decline since second quarter of 2014. And you can see it, and it's just draw a line practically. And it's just there, it's almost right on, it's not a straight line, but it's semi close to it. And the trend is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 quarters, almost 2 years long. And we can wonder how soon is this trend going to reverse, or will it, or how much further, how much longer will it continue? It can't be good. It can't be good. The profits are down, profits are down, profits are down. Profits are the fundamental source for credit. But credit is ultimately all about, although the government thinks it can just spin credit out of thin air and hand people some monopoly money and say, go spend it, have fun. The truth is, real credit that doesn't adversely affect the economy, doesn't adversely affect the nation, real credit is what's left over after you take the productive people in your economy and they go out and they work for a living and they earn, let's say they earn $50,000 a year, but they only spend $40,000. They save $10,000 a year. That, they deposit it in a bank, and the bank has money then that it can lend to other people. The credit, real credit, is based on real profits. Whatever you've saved after whatever you've earned. But they've tried to create a system where you don't have to earn things. You can just collect entitlements. You don't have to pay interest. It's not hard. We don't have to have real savings to lend money. All we have to do is thin currency out of the Federal Reserve, and we can lend that into circulation. They've created a fantasy world. They've created something that's not, you know, this is a little bit along this line that I was talking about with the article that involves Stanley Druckenmiller. He's become a billionaire by looking for trends that were unsustainable. He looked at something and said, that can't work. That can't keep working. That's going to blow up in everybody's face. He might not know exactly when it's going to blow up in their face, but he's not looking for something that's going to blow up in everyone's face tomorrow. He's looking for something that's going to blow up in the next couple of years, some point in the future. And he says, I'm going to bet on that. I'm going to take a long position in it. I'm going to hang on tight because I know a fundamental premise is unsustainable. Well, the idea that we can have credit that's based on nothing but just spinning money out of thin air is ultimately unsustainable. We have to have productivity, number one, savings, number two, and out of the savings, then we have credit. Whatever we're saved, then we have money that we can lend to others, and they can perhaps build little businesses or big businesses. But somebody's got to be productive, number one, and the whole entitlement mentality is contrary to that. I saw something that 70%, I saw a report just recently, that 70% of the government's budget goes to entitlements right now. That's spectacular. $2 out of $3 that the government collects in taxes right now, or borrows, is being spent on entitlements. I mean, that's just crazy. That's crazy. No one is protecting the productive elements of the society. And it's like, fine, kill all the farmers. You know, you can complain about the farmers. Let's kill all the farmers. All right. And where do you think your next steak is coming from? Where do you suppose your next salad is coming from?
China.
Whatever happened. Yeah, maybe so. We'll import them from China. They can grow
Mexico,
it in the
Canada.
Yeah, grow it in the gardens that are fertilized with human waste.
I mean, we import more than we export when it comes to agriculture. So, you know, that's so many people in this country still are hungry. There's so much food that is wasted in this country that is just thrown away, and yet there's people living on the streets and so forth that are hungry. And it's just, you know, you have food kitchens and so forth that, you know, are begging for food and so forth. And yet you have a lot of these farms that, because the grocery stores won't take a marked tomato, it just gets thrown away. And again, I'll refer to a farm in New York. Was it like 40% of their crops? It's just wasted, thrown away, disposed of, because grocery stores won't take it because they can't sell it. We have become, you know, we have become so.
They're just throwing out 40% of
their
tomatoes.
They're throwing away 40% of their crops,
including tomatoes.
Including tomatoes.
Well, you know, there should be a real market for tomatoes
you
in this
think?
Political season. I mean, I don't know of a candidate out there that doesn't deserve one. We've got these tomatoes. They're not for human consumption, but they are throwing tomatoes. They are throwing quality tomatoes. And if you would like to demonstrate, you know, in front of one of your favorite or disfavorite candidates, here, we'll give you a 5-gallon pail of tomatoes.
But it is just a sign of where we are as a country, where, you know, things are so wasted and nobody pays attention to it. Well, one of these days, those paint tomatoes are going to become very important and people will be scrapping for them. But, you know, people go to grocery stores. Hey, I'd buy one that's marked if it was reduced by a buck. You know, if it was reduced by 50%, I'd buy it. You know, but
Regardless of whether you buy your tomatoes for salads or for cooking or for throwing at politicians, the point remains, first, you got to have the producers.
This country has been
There aren't going to be any tomatoes if you don't have any tomato farmers. And you can calculate, well, we need to change the price of tomatoes so they're more accessible. They can be more easily purchased by the people on entitlement programs. Well, fine, take care of the people on entitlement programs, but if in doing so you wind up putting the tomato farmer out of business, it's not going to be long and you're not going to have any tomatoes at any price. And that's essentially my argument and whatever it is in this segment. You know, production leads to savings, and savings lay the foundation for credit.
The government thinks
it can break that chain and just produce credit out of nothing, out of thin air, and I don't think they can. And when they try, it guarantees we have an unsustainable program, and if Stanley Druckenmiller's strategy is valid, and made him a billionaire, so I had good evidence to think it might be. It means look at these strategies and understand them. If you can see a bubble, you're seeing something that is unsustainable. All right, then do what Stanley does. Figure out who's going to be hurt when the bubble pops. Figure out who's going to be enriched when the bubble pops. Invest accordingly. And the government is making this easy because everything they do is unsustainable. And on top of which, it's mostly stupid. And so you look at this and say, oh, they're going to do negative interest rates, huh? Well, fine, they'll do it for a while. But it's unsustainable. And that means sooner or later, it might be a few years down the road, this is not a philosophy or a strategy for speculators. Speculators are gamblers. Speculators are people who want it right now. They're looking at the next roll of the dice. Baby needs a new pair of shoes. You understand? What's the roll of the dice? That's what they want to know right now. That's speculators. Investors are looking at the fundamentals. They're looking at the unsustainable bubbles, and they're saying, okay, I'm going to put my money here, and I'm going to wait for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, and I'm going to make a nice, fat profit. So, let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial. financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll-free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Here's an article from The Nation. And the headline is, with a Wyoming victory, Sanders extends his multi-state winning streak. In fact, this is a little bit dated. The article is 2 days old. Hillary did win Missouri as of today, if I understand correctly, so this isn't quite correct. But from a perspective of at least prior to today, here's the article. It says, the senator from Vermont has now won 17 contests, including 8 of the last 9. It will now be 8 of the last 10. For all the talk about inevitability of Hillary Clinton's candidacy, the Democratic race remains an unsettled and ongoing contest. The delegate count matters, but so too does the momentum count. Bernie Sanders has now won 17 contests, as appeared to 20 for Hillary. The closing of the gap in recent weeks has been striking. The delegate math still favors Clinton, but Sanders' winning streak in recent caucuses and primaries has given his camp space in which to argue that the senator could catch up with Clinton. I don't think he can. They're going to make that argument. I can argue that I can fly around the room like Peter Pan, but probably not. They can argue that Senator Sanders could catch up with Clinton in the race for pledged delegates for this summer's national convention, and about how superdelegates might be encouraged to switch their allegiance to Bernie, as many switched allegiance in the 2008 campaign. The Wyoming win adds to the momentum, blah, blah, blah. Democratic race will go on through New York and Pennsylvania on to California. Clinton is still the front runner, but she too is also on a very real contest with an insurgent challenger who keeps winning. Well, he didn't win Missouri. All right, so his string as Big Mo has been taken a small dent. But I doubt that anyone seriously believes that Bernie Sanders can win the Democratic nomination for president of the United States, certainly not by getting enough delegates before the convention. Unless Hillary dies or is indicted, she will almost certainly be the Democrat nominee. But the fact that Bernie Sanders has won 17 out of the first 37 primaries, including 8 of the last 9 and now 8 out of the last 10, is evidence that rank and file supporters of the Democrat Party are not particularly thrilled by Hillary's candidacy. Bernie Sanders' victories may not win him the nomination, but they are evidence that the Democratic Party is not united behind Hillary. That lack of party unity is evidence that even though nominated, Hillary will probably have a very difficult time winning the presidency. We shall see. Both of the front runners, really Hillary and Trump, they inspire a certain amount of disunity in their own parties and certain they're polarizing candidates. So who is going to win the next election? Who's going to win the election? Who's going to be president, Melody?
Who do you think is going to be president?
I don't know. I'd hope for Trump, but it's another one that's like receiving a package in the mail that ticks. You know, I think, oh boy, you know, I don't know if this is birthday president or a present or if it's a bomb. But Trump ticks. Hillary, she doesn't tick. She rattles like a rattlesnake. All right. Both of them, whichever one you receive in the mail, I don't know. I'm hoping that, I mean, Hillary is just, to me, her association with lawbreaking and violence and the Bill Clinton administration and perpetual lies, and I don't know. I mean, she is an embarrassment to me. Trump may be, I don't say what you want about Trump. He's at least not, so far as I'm able to understand, an obvious gangster. I'm not sure that you can say that about Hillary. So for me,
we just don't know about it.
Well, it may be.
We just don't know about it.
I mean, and I'm not going to be surprised if it comes out later on. We say, oh, yeah, we got another. Who's the real party that's running the country? Maybe it's the mafia. I don't know. It's not the Republicans or the Democrats. It's the mafia. Or maybe it's the Aryan Brotherhood. Who knows?
I think Trump cleans up his messes where I think the Clintons really didn't care.
Yeah.
No.
They just keep talking and move on to the next one.
Hey, we have a caller on the line. We have Ivan joining us this afternoon. It's been a while. Good afternoon, Ivan.
Good afternoon, Melody. How are you doing? I have a point just to bring up. I guess you didn't discuss that about the B-52s which were dispatched to Qatar by the U.S. Air Force a few days ago, and you know, my thoughts about that because Russia just a few days ago also sent the S-300 missiles to Iran. So I was just wondering if there is no something brewing up, brewing on in the Middle East as far as Iran is concerned, and then, you know, and we are building up our air forces, B-52s, which are usually not sent out, you know, I mean, they're quite expensive to fly, and so what are your thoughts, Al and Melody, on that proposal that there is a possibility of a shooting war between Iran and U.S. and, of course, then eventually Russia? Hello? Hello? Hello?
You can hear me right now.
I can hear you, Al.
Okay. I don't know what's happening, but Yvonne is not hearing us.
Hello. Yeah, I can hear you, but can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Before I couldn't hear anybody. I was just dead. So I just thought maybe he just hung up on me. So did you get my question or my point? Or?
You answered.
No, we haven't hung up on you based on your question or your point of view, Yvonne. My thought is, first off, do I think anything's going on in the Middle East? Something's been going on in the Middle East for a couple thousand years.
Right.
I mean, it's almost amazing whenever that part of the world actually settles down. This has been going on since the Crusades and the Roman invasion and wherever. There's always something going on in the Middle East. If you could get paid by the conspiracy, all right,
in the Middle East. You don't have to do anything. Just conspire to do something. And if you could get $1,000 a conspiracy, you could become a wealthy man. Now, on the other hand, when they do move B-52s close by, and they move Russian fighters close by, it's not just to get let them dry out in the sun. They are there to at least do a little saber rattling. Whether we will see actual war break out of the sort you describe, I don't think we're going to see war between the United States and the Soviet Union and Russia, excuse me, break out in the Middle East. Now, it may be that some American surrogates will fight with some Russian surrogates. That could happen. But in terms of direct involvement or direct war between the United States and Russia, that's dangerous business. Very dangerous, because if anyone does something stupid, all of a sudden we're liable to see thermonuclear war on a scale that the planet may not be able to survive.
That is correct.
So I don't expect that. But the surrogates, yeah, they might.
Well, you never know what could trigger the Third World War in between the U.S. and Russia. I mean, it might be in a wrong shot at the wrong spot, and you know, they might sink a ship, you know, maybe a warship or a carrier, U.S. carrier, and, you know, and then all hell will break loose. But, you know, I mean, I don't think they are sending, you know, because on S-300s and 400s, which Russia had, was promising to Iran for many years, and they never delivered it. Iran paid for it, like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. But because of the problem, you know, of, they couldn't trade with the outside world, they never were delivered. And all of a sudden, they are delivered, you know, as of last week to Iran. Now, then we see, I mean, in between, we see these bombers going to Qatar. And so they wouldn't be moving this equipment, which is not cheap, you know, in flying B-52s and so on, you know, is not cheap. And a quartermastering all, you know, the pilots and all the support troops takes money. So, and I don't
think but they may be getting money out of the deal, too. Because whichever side Russia hooks up with, or the United States hooks up with, that side is going to be able to, in theory, provide crude oil. They've got something to trade. I don't know if we want it or not. We have enough of our own at the moment. But there's something to be gained here. And it's entirely possible that the Russians are moving their planes in just as a device to impress their allies.
Well, no, they are,
you know, their allies are not blood brothers and kin and the rest of it who fight for the death to the death for their beloved Russians. And the same thing with the alleged allies for the United States. We can't count on them any longer. From the minute we run out of dollar bills, they're gone. So we have to impress our own allies from time to time. Oh, yes, let's go flex our muscles. Look here. Want to feel my bicep? Here's a B-52. We don't actually intend to fly it, but we will use it to impress the yokels. And so maybe that's part of what's going on there, too. But, of course, if you're going to do that, you're taking a big risk that sooner or later someone's going to set, you know, here, you feel my bicep, and all of a sudden something's going to happen, and a B-52, you don't just see it, it gets launched. And it's, yeah, it's dangerous, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, the only thing, the Russia didn't send plane. They sent those S-400 and S-300 defensive missiles, which are against planes, you know. And they can reach, you know, I don't know, like, I think 400, 500 miles radius, you know. So they are quite versatile and, you know, very accurate from what I understand. So that's, and like I say, they have been bought by Iran a while back, and they never were delivered until last week, I think. I read an article on...
You're talking about these anti-aircraft missiles.
Right. It was in anti-war news. I don't know if you get a blog or whatever, the website. Mm-hmm. But anyways, that's where I found it. And like I say, there were a couple other sites where they were also discussing the missiles, you know, being delivered to Iran. So, and then, those are used against enemy planes, if it's, you know, U.S., Israeli, or whatever, you know. So I was just wondering if because of what's going on all over the world and the elections, what you were talking about earlier here, which is a mess, and, you know, it just seems like it's going to be a hot, long summer coming up, you know. And I just wondered
if we live that long, it may be a hot, long summer.
You know,
and then we've got race problems here in the United States. Talk about a hot summer. We'll see what happens. But we live in interesting times, Yvonne, and I don't know what to do about it other than hang on tight.
That's all we can do, I agree, you know. But I just thought I'll share that, you know, see what your opinions are on it, and see what happens next couple of months, you know. Should be interesting.
Oh, it'll be interesting, that's for sure. Whatever gets us, it won't be boredom.
No, that's
right.
Yeah.
Nobody's dying of boredom anymore. That may have happened in the past, but not going to happen. Not this year, I don't think, and maybe not for the next several.
I agree. With elections, everything else going on, and the influx of Syrians into Europe and everything else, it just seems like...
Well, it's just everywhere. There's something happening everywhere. And we haven't seen Al, you mentioned a little bit ago, you know, until something gets nervous and does something stupid. So far, we've been fortunate. There hasn't been anything really stupid that's happened. But it's just a matter of time until something gets out of control, someone loses control, and... you know, you have the big domino effect. I mean, we have the finances, we have the debt bubbles, we have, you know, we have the wars, we have rumors of wars, we have, you know, you have the Russians talking with the Saudis about capping the oil and talking with the rest of OPEC when, you know, initially it was to hurt Russia. Now they're coming around. I mean, you have all of these things that are going on, and yet...
It beats the heck out of reality TV, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Who would have ever thought could be that interesting?
This is much better than the Kardashians.
Yeah, it's a big improvement on the Kardashians. We're out of time, folks. Thank you for your call, Yvonne. We'll talk to you another time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back mañana. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Yvonne. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.